You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Una puta solo?
Yes, Greedo. As a matter of fact, I was just going to see your boss. Tell Java that I've got his money.
Son pitare. Maratamti tach makichita. Java wa ninchikoh pa mulshani aitani wanyaruska. Chaskinyawi uchuzu.
Yeah, but this time I've got the money.
Erichalya kulka inti kuninkusua.
I don't have it with me. Tell Java.
Java hai tikti. Tongurulie pulyanya urwan spastika kushunku umponwa tipi.
Even I get bored at sometimes. Do you think I had a choice?
Club Java. Pukpa. Kulpak ni atapampa.
Over my dead body.
Uchle nyuma. Ches pokututa krista krenko. Ya koska.
Yes, I bet you have. Sorry about the mess.
Yeah. It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got
nerves. Make love in a hammock.
What?
Proof that Han shot first.
It's for everybody for last week with May the 4th be with you. We just thought we'd stuck that up. We were tossing up what to throw up.
And we just thought that we miss May the 4th, unfortunately, but we thought that we have that footage. This is from the original Star Wars before they did all the cuts. Han shot first.
Damn right.
Hello, I'm Dave McVeigh. This is Josh Philpott. This is Film Actually, episode 131 for the 14th of May, 2011. This is the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. How is everybody today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
And how's our chat room? They're stuck with us for this. And Spenny Toon in our chat room has already jumped in and said, I should get a Han shot first t-shirt.
You should.
Should, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Now, we've got something slightly different for you this week, because normally we do joint reviews. But this week, due to time conflicts and due to the fact that there are too many goddamn movies coming out this summer, Josh and I are actually going to review different films this week. Mm-hmm. And they both are parts of franchises, mm-hmm. which leads us to the second part. So first of all, Josh is going to review Scream 4 from the Scream franchise, and then I'm going to review the Fast and Furious franchise. I'm going to review Fast 5. Mm-hmm. Now, I know in Australia the posters are all saying Fast and Furious 5, but when you actually see the movie, it says Fast 5. So they've changed the posters, but the print that we have here is still the American print. The movie is officially called Fast 5. All right, so we're going to review those in just a few minutes. We're also going to do a new list of five later on the show, which is going to be five movie franchises worth spending your time with. We thought, considering that we're both doing franchise films, it felt to us that we should talk about some franchise, because there's nothing worse than sitting down and watching a movie and then going, wow, that was good, and I hear there's sequels, let's start watching them, and then finding out that every other movie sucks. And I'll give you one example of that right now, which is The Howling. The Howling is a really good horror film about werewolves directed by Joe Dante in the early 80s. And then they made, I think it's six sequels, all straight to video.
Six?
Yeah, I think it's six.
I didn't even know there was six.
All straight to video crap. And none of them actually produced or have anything to do with the first film.
Oh, dude, that's great.
They're just name only. In fact, I'll even go so far as to say Howling 3 is actually set in Australia, about marsupials, and it's got nothing to do with anything. So,
oh, dude, that's great.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about franchises that are actually worth spending your time with. Okay, but before we do any of that, we normally do a feedback and what you've been watching section, and we are still going to do... Why are my headphones died? I've got no sound. Oh, there we are. We are going to do some feedback. We've got one feedback for this show. It's from Mike B. And he says, hey, Dave and Josh, first I want to apologize.
Hey.
First I want to apologize. Fell out of sync with the podcast after the Tron show around Christmas as I started listening to the Kevin Smith Smodcast Network. Well, I can't, you know, begrudge you for that because Smodcast Network is a lot of fun.
As long as you come back.
That's right. And you came back. So the only, and only recently caught up with them. And now your podcast. In reference to what you guys were discussing in the show 128, Paul, about David Hyde Pierce voicing Abe Sapien. He says, I remember hearing around that time that initially it was Doug Jones acting and David Hyde Pierce doing the voice work. Now, but for the second film, in all his humility, though he was called back to do the voice in the second film, he is actually, in fact, Doug Jones doing the voice work as Abe Sapien. So David Hyde Pierce was brought back, but because Doug Jones could do it so well, David Hyde Pierce bowed out.
Basically
said, he already does it. He doesn't need me.
Yeah.
David Hyde Pierce felt that Doug Jones had put so much work into the role that he felt he should take full credit for the role, hence why it's Doug Jones' name in the credits, not his.
Yeah.
It was just fortunate that they sounded so similar. But big prop to the guy for being so humble, and I thought you may enjoy that little factoid. And I do. Thank you very much for clearing that up.
Yeah.
All right. He also wanted to mention that as you always have giveaways that are not available to the listeners outside of Australia, you should have a two sections of winners for the DVDs, the winner inside your lovely country and a no prize to the best for everywhere else.
We always give you a props, dude, because yours are always hilarious.
Absolutely. This isn't the same mic. This is a mic from Canada. This is Mike B. And I agree. And we always give him props for his entry because his entry is fabulous.
Yeah.
If you want to enter the competitions from outside of Australia, you're more than welcome to. And I think having a no prize winner is a good idea. I think that's fantastic. Now, it says here, and I love this part, it says, Josh should be dubbed the passive-aggressive king.
Passive-aggressive.
Now, ready for this? I love his explanation. He says, I don't always agree, and I do really respect his opinion and how verbose he is about it. But, quote, unquote, I'm sorry, but, ... actually means you're not sorry. So just clip it, maybe preface it with just a fuck you instead.
I would, man, but it's only due to the requirements of our society as a whole that I do something like that. Yeah. It's like, I'm sorry that you're wrong, but
now he says,
should I maybe do that instead?
He says, better aggressive than passive aggressive. Just
damn
let
right.
it out, Josh.
Damn right. Look, it's not so much passive aggressiveness, man. I am actually genuinely sorry to disagree with people because I don't like to upset them. The only reason that I will say something like, I'm sorry, but, is usually when
it
I am
softens
actually...
softens the blow.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm not actually taking a pick at you, but this is the reality of it. And I try to limit myself. But yes, I agree. Aggressive is better than passive aggressive.
Absolutely. Agreed. He now says, thanks a lot, guys. You make heading into work a damn sight more entertaining. And I like hearing what you have to say, especially when I don't agree.
Yep. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Mike B. He says, P.S. Now, this is the part that I'm going to answer. He says, P.S. I work in a cinema, and I'm curious why, Dave, why the hell and all your sort stay to the end of the... he says end of the trailers. I think he means credits.
Yeah.
End of the credits. It may help me hate them less.
Yeah.
Probably not, but here's hoping, Marvel films excluded. So what he's saying is he works in a cinema, and when the film is over, he's saying, get the fuck out, so that he can clean the cinema and stuff, and why do people like me stay around to the end? And I'm going to answer that two ways, because A, you never know what might be at the end of a film, so I stick around just because, and it's not just Marvel films, there's actually a tag at the end of Fast and Furious. So just in case, you never know what's going to stick around. But B, and I've said this on the show before, I personally believe, and Josh disagrees with me, but I personally believe that it shows a respect to the filmmakers. And you know what? I actually do read credits because I'm often curious to know where films were shot. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know what companies actually worked on it. We would never have known that Ubisoft would have had something to do with the effects on Predators had we not stayed around to actually see the fact that Ubisoft's name were in the credits, you know? So, and it's fascinating because you can often see the progression of companies and filmmakers by seeing where they fall in the credits and then as film goes on, seeing them move around. So it's a personal thing for me. I'm a film junkie. So for me, it's finding out every single little bit about films, and so credits are often a way of doing that. That's a personal opinion. Not everybody does stay around, and I respect that too. But for me, I like to stay to the end of the credits. For me, it is those people have spent so much time making that film. This is my way of showing respect to those people, especially if it's a film I like.
Yeah.
And if it's a film I hate, I like to know who to blame. Now, Josh, you don't feel quite the same way.
My My honest opinion is, number one, I don't have a memory good enough to remember all those names anyway. And second of all, my respect goes out to those people through reviewing it, through telling people I like it, through passing on the knowledge that it is worth going to see. That's my way of respecting those people. I don't disagree with you. Like, I think in the same way that, you know, people have respect for certain things that I don't agree with, I won't ever correct them for that. And I don't think you're wrong. It is a great way to do it. And I'm sure that the people there would feel kind of chuffed about that. Personally, I just don't really believe that I give enough credit by doing that, because I'm not paying attention. I don't pay attention to words going on a screen. It's like reading a book written in Linux code. I'm not going to enjoy reading it. It's just names and things. And unlike you, also, I don't know every single one of those people's jobs. I know the basic ones, and I know what grips do. I just, you know,
I'm not so interested in them. I'm more interested in there's certain key things. I like to know shooting locations of films, because it's often fascinating to find out where they actually made films.
I'm more likely to do that when I have the DVD at home.
And that's fair enough, too.
Yeah.
I noticed that somebody in our chat room, James from Melbourne, I think it is, who's basically said, oh, no, it's Freak, sorry. I said, I love knowing who is in them, etc. He hates TV companies who shrink and fast forward the end credits.
Yeah.
And look, there was actually a huge controversy here in Australia a few years ago when the Tropfest Film Festival happened, because they actually needed to fit all the Tropfest films into an allotted TV time slot. And so what they did was they cut all the credits off of all the short films. Now, this is incredibly disrespectful, considering that these people are also doing short films to be discovered. And if you take all their credits off, you know, there are going to be people out there who are taking notes on who made what. And suddenly they didn't have that. So there was a lot of controversy over Channel 10 doing that at the time. So look, it's different strokes for different folks. You're not going to get me out of a cinema before, like, the last thing is rolled. I paid money to be in that cinema. I'm staying there till the end. Also, let's face it, not always, and there's a lot of crap in there as well. But on a film that has a really nice soundtrack, the end suite that runs through the credits can often be a really nice piece of music where they amalgam a lot of stuff together.
And if it's a bad movie, it's usually something written by Nickelback.
Yeah, exactly. And there are some movies where the end credits start rolling. You're going, really? That's what you chose to put in the end credits? On the worst example of that was the Lost in Space remake that came out a few years back with William Hurt. The film finished, and the film finishes really abruptly. And then there's this piece of like rock music in the end credits, and you just go, what? Yeah, what the hell is that? You know, it just didn't work at all. Anyway, this week, so that's our feedback. Thank you very much. Keep the feedback coming in. It's always good to sparks debate, so it's fantastic. I do want to say very quickly that this week, we all watched lots of movies. Josh actually saw several movies this week, and so have I. We're not going to go into all that this week. I will say, for those who have been following my year in movies, I apologize. I'm about 2 weeks behind on updating that site. I keep a running list, but I haven't updated the Tumblr. I'm still watching a film a day. I just haven't updated the Tumblr. I will get to it this week, I promise. But what we are going to talk about, Josh and I were invited by Paramount Pictures earlier this week, on Monday, in fact, to see a 20-minute sneak peek of Super 8.
Yeah.
We arrived at the Vent Cinemas. They took us in. We saw a little video blurb from J.J. Abrams, who actually talked about the film, and then they showed us two key scenes from the film. And I thought we would just talk about that very quickly, about what we saw. So, Josh, what were your opinions of that 20 minutes?
Well, look, it was an interesting situation, because it was nice to have the intro with J.J. I think they did a really good job incorporating that, because it kind of does give you an insight to what he was trying to accomplish with it. And really, a few of the points that he says really ring home when you watch the footage he's chosen to show you. I think that the acting ability of the younger kids is absolutely top-notch. Like, they are just absolutely amazing, and all so self-aware of themselves. Like, you can tell that these kids know that it's more, like, they know how to act it out. Like, it feels very real. Which is a problem with a lot of young actors now today, is I just don't believe them on screen. And like he says in the thing, he was trying to really aim outside that sort of standard LA kid kind of a situation.
Yeah, and he was saying they actually went outside of the state to try and find the best actors rather than the Hollywood kids.
Fantastic. Exactly. And, you know, good for them, and they did a really good job at that. The lead kid, especially Joe.
And the Fanning sister. Is it Ellie Fanning, I think it is? She was amazing, too.
Yep, absolutely. I also think that it's a really good choice to have Carl, is it? The father, who was also the father in Twilight?
Yeah. Oh, no, was he the father in Twilight? Oh, now you got me confused.
Ah, dude. Anyway,
doesn't matter, but he was really good, though.
Yep. No. He was he's fantastic, and he is one of those really kind of like downtrodden actors. And the first scene that they show was really just an establishing scene. It was just to kind of get the idea that the family isn't very well structured. The second scene, of course, was the highlight, in my opinion, of the whole thing, which was seeing the train crash.
Which was amazing.
And considering that's apparently not finished.
Yeah, they actually said to us, they said that not all the effects were finalized yet. And boy, yeah, okay, there were a couple of shots here and there which look a little bit, you know, a little bit pixelated, they're a little bit janky, but the overall impact of that scene is remarkable. And you sit there and go, even if that was the finished product, I would be happy with that.
Yeah.
I have no problems with that at all, you know? So he says he's the guy from Early Edition. Josh Spencer, he's very good. And then they showed us one more scene, which was that scene with the train crash, by the way, was an extended scene. They showed us the whole build up to it, which was them out there making their movie, and it showed a lovely piece of acting from the Fanning sister.
If you have any interest in film, is just awesome. It's just so well put together. He's so funny.
Yes.
Like the scenes between them, I love the fact that everybody really has their roles defined. And it is that real 70s, 80s kid Goonie style group where you've got
absolutely.
The geek child, the cool child, the crazy child. It's like all of them are filled.
Now, James Melvin says, is the alien a good guy or a bad guy? We don't know. We never actually saw the alien in the clip. There is actually a rumor kicking around that the alien might be invisible.
Yeah.
And that could be a possibility because we never actually saw the alien. And the way that J.J. Abrams frames that scene in the petrol station, there's that one lovely shot with the pan back and the turning sign of the petrol station is right in front of the window of the station. So you can hear everything going on, but you can't actually see into the station.
Yeah. Now, this is my big gripe with it is fuck you, J.J. Abrams, because you did it again. And like, this is what I always whinge about him doing. It's like, when I got to the end of the video, I was like, that was really good footage, and I will not say anything in the contrary. It's like, it really is good footage. It's very well put together. The scenes that he shows are phenomenal. But what the hell, man? It's like, you get to the end of it, and you have more questions than when you walked in.
That was
what the hell
point.
Are the weird white Rubik's Cube boxes? What were they about? What's this?
We have to see the film to find out.
Exactly, but no, it's just one of those things where I'm just like, dude, why'd you make me have to... Like, I mean...
All right, let's put some people out of their misery about this film. If you haven't seen the trailers are embedded on our site. This is a TV spot that came out this week.
Yeah.
So this is a brand new TV spot. Literally came out a couple of days ago. I've grabbed it here for the show. So this is the new Super 8 TV spot. And there's a shot of a car being lifted, which kind of adds credence to that invisible alien idea. So watch carefully. It's very quick.
I've never seen this kind of thing before. The fuse box electrical system's ripped out.
We've gotten calls from people who found local dogs, but the calls coming in aren't local.
Lucy!
It's like they all just ran away.
Dogs, watch out!
Super 8 in theaters and IMAX June 10th.
Dude.
It's an interesting situation. You say the invisible alien. I'm leaning more and more towards that because it's not only like the spinning thing that you saw there on screen. It's also the fact that in the footage, the only time you see an actual image of the alien is from the reflection through the water, which is when he was standing. He's leaning down at one of the sections and he's kind of crawling away and you sort of see something in the shadow. It's so quick. There's no way you could tell what it is. But that's the only time you kind of see an image. And I, like most people, were tossing up, is that because it's unfinished footage or is there just really no way?
Okay, Sweet Peas, answer that question. It's the dad from Friday Night Lights.
That's the one. Dad from Friday Night Lights.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you very much, Sweet Pea, in our chat room.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I knew I got that wrong. I've actually got the page opened up on my laptop right now. And I'm looking at it going, wrong guy. but yeah, no.
Look, I think the film looks sensational. The 10 minutes that we saw made us want to see more. And that's the key, is that we came out of that and I felt completely satisfied with what I saw. And I just went, And I was trying to explain this. I was actually having a long talk with the Paramount rep that was there, because I got there early. I was there, actually there before you. And I was talking to her and I was saying, this for me, forget all the superheroes, forget everything, this for me is the most anticipated film of the year. And it's because it also falls into my age bracket as well. I grew up, my teen years were that whole late 70s, early 80s Spielberg film.
Yeah.
And when I saw this trailer, I went, J.J. Abrams has completely captured that.
Yeah,
which is what he set out to do, and he has just done an amazing job with that. And so all I can think is, this is what I want to see. It's, I said to Josh afterwards, it feels like a cross between The Goonies, because it's a group of kids, and Gremlins, because it's got that dark tone. And all I can think is, I'm down. I'm down with this completely.
You know? But it's not too dark, and that's the one thing I'm really liking.
Look, my 11-year-old is dying to see it. He goes, do you think it's going to be scary? I said, yeah, it probably will be, but it'll be exciting.
Yeah.
It'll be exciting, scary.
What I really got from that as well was just the concept that I looked at it and went, this really feels like what I went to see when I was a kid. It's that whole concept that I know there's going to be, like, it's not dulled, it's not sort of like given a blunting over the top of its edge. It's like, it's what I loved about going to the thing. It's like, it's why kids of our generation, like, parents think that, you know, kids are starting to get worse and they're getting more mature. No, we saw the same stuff. I went and I saw Indiana Jones and I watched a dude's heart get pulled out through his chest when I was a kid. Now, that was the scariest thing I'd ever goddamn seen. But the point was, I got over it. And then you have a talk with your parents on the way out and they say, look, it's just a film. It's not real. I learned to do that with every single film. It's like, these things are important so people can distinct fiction from reality.
Yes.
And the reason that they go and see Transformers, even though it's an M with a six-year-old kid, is because it's the same fucking film we would have shown kids 10 years ago.
We're cotton-wooling our kids so much that when Harry Potter's coming, they go, oh, I think it's too dark for them. No, bullshit. Harry Potter's are great fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, granted, some of the Harry Potter stuff is a little bit dark, and maybe you shouldn't take your six-year-old to it, but those teenage kids, those 12, 11, 12, 13-year-old kids are going to give a blast out of that. There's nothing wrong with getting a little bit scared.
Exactly.
Gets the adrenaline running.
And this is what I have to say about this film, is it just, honestly, I implore you, and I know you will anyway, but take him to this film.
Oh, damn straight. He'll be there at our movie night for this
and
one.
And he will love that film.
Yes.
He will love it.
Absolutely. No, he really wants to see it, and I am all there for taking him to see it. I'd say go see this film when it comes out. I think it's going to be the event of the summer. This is going to be the surprise event of the summer. Yeah, we got all the superheroes, and they're all events, but this is going to be the surprise. This is going to be the one we all go, wow, that was something different. And that's the key. Something different.
Yep.
Not a sequel, not a remake, not a reboot, not a superhero. Something different, you know? And I think you and I both said the same thing. We wrote separately, and I think we said the same thing, which is the one thing that all of our films seem to be lacking right now is heart.
Yep.
And this film has heart packed into it.
Oh, dude, absolutely. In the short period of time that we saw, there is just so much to love about this film.
Absolutely. So I think, I can't speak highly enough of the 20 minutes we saw, and I can't wait for its release.
Absolutely.
Cannot wait for its release. All right, let's move into some film reviews. We actually have that trailer, by the way, embedded, in our show notes. So if you want to see that little, I think it's literally like 45 seconds long. So you can see that new TV spot. I will probably actually embed that on the site proper. Mm-hmm. So even if I don't, it's in our show notes, but I'll probably embed it proper anyway.
Cool.
Okay, so feature film review one. Now, do you want to read the description or do you want me to read the description?
No, you do. You go right
okay,
ahead,
I'll
man.
Read the description.
This is
okay.
Your thing.
All right, so feature film review one for this week is Scream 4. Josh went to see this last night. I haven't seen it, so Josh is going to take this review, but I'm going to give you the lowdown on it. Now, I've kept both of the descriptions straight from IMDb, so they're pretty slack, but I need to keep everything kind of short. So, directed by Wes Craven, who's returned, because I don't think he directed part three, did he? He produced part three. I think somebody else took over
directing
part three. So Wes Craven is back. It's written by Kevin Williamson, who's written all of them, I think, and Aaron Kruger, based on the characters created by Kevin Williamson for the first Scream. It stars Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette, who were from the original films, and they are joined by Hayden Panettiere, Anna Paquin, Kristen Bell, and a whole bunch of other new people. So it's actually got a fairly good cast on this one. 10 years have passed, and Sydney Prescott, who has put herself back together thanks to, in part, to her writing, is visited again by the Ghostface Killer. Surprise. And here's the trailer for you. So have a look at the trailer, and then Josh is going to tell you what this film is actually like.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Here is my Whisboro Massacre anniversary question. What is your favorite scary movie?
What's your favorite scary movie?
One generation's tragedy is the next one's joke.
What is your favorite scary movie, man?
I'll show you.
This week marks the anniversary of the infamous Woodsboro murders. Local celebrity victim Sydney Prescott chose to return to her hometown.
Welcome home, Sydney. Watch the preview of coming events.
What do you want?
Who is this?
He's trying to do Ghostface.
I'm standing in the closet.
Liar. Dewey!
What's going on?
It is not public information.
It's all over the internet.
It is?
There's a killer out there patterning his murders after the original movie.
It's time for someone new to die.
The unexpected is the new cliche,
and virgins can die now.
Does that mean that I'm not gonna live as long as these two?
Clearly. To be the new version, the killer should be filming the murders.
Down! Down behind you!
Go ahead if you have the guts.
Not to implicate him. You can't kill Sydney. She's victim royalty.
Not true. Sid's expendable.
Point taken. Guaranteed third act main cast bloodbath.
Fingers crossed on some nudity for a change.
Time for your last question. Name the remake of the groundbreaking...
Halloween, Texas Chainsaw, Dawn of the Dead, The Hills Have Eyes, Amityville Horror, Black Christmas, House of Wax, Hot Night, My Bloody Valentine. It's one of those, right?
None of the above.
I'll be right back.
I know this one. You're not supposed to say that, are you?
You should have seen the look on your face.
All right, Josh, so tell us about Scream 4.
Well, look, everybody will know that I would like to consider myself, and feel free, I know people will attack me this, but be a reasonable horror aficionado.
You're a pretty big horror fan.
Like, half my collection is horrors, and I push pretty hard for horrors. And everybody will remember my infamous Final Destination review, where I got relatively... not incredibly passionate about that one. Look.
Oh, wait, that was a while ago?
Yeah, but that was the whole thing. I mean, like, with horror, we've been going through this weird amalgamation/transformation for years now, where everything's getting new sets of rules, and everything's kind of playing different ways and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, when I heard about this concept, I got really excited, because I wanted to see someone from that first generation of filmmakers to kind of turn around and take a look at what was currently around and see whether or not we could make any sort of sense out of it, and, you know, sort of maybe make some genuine impressions of how society kind of works this day and age in horror. What I learned from watching this film is that he has as little idea about where horror is going as I do. The film is a mess, and it is... it's almost, the fact that it has so much in it actually makes a lot of, almost does a lot of damage to the actual film itself. Because what happens is you end up with these situations appearing that are very obviously people trying to figure out what the rules are now. And the problem is that we've kind of gone past rules. And they're kind of like, well, our rules right, our rules wrong, you know, should we be monitoring ourselves better, you know, like, do they die beforehand or afterhand? It's like, it wasn't supposed to matter. The rules came from fans of horror, and we were just commenting on it. It wasn't for you to change them. It wasn't like, if the virgin doesn't die because she's not a virgin, we all hate the film. It just became a cliche. It became a standard, because horrors... developed out of that very kind of like early Christian-esque kind of a society that we had, which was, if you do wrong things, you get killed.
Yeah.
And that was where all this stuff started
to happen. In particular, if you fornicate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fornication, drugs, all these things, that was where it started. And we broke away from those rules as the society itself changed. And it's interesting because some of the jokes really work if you're a horror fan, like the bit I was telling you about beforehand where you've got the two cops in the car and you see one bit of that scene there where they're actually discussing who would die technically under the rules of horror, because if the guy gets up out of the car, the black guy gets up and goes around the building and comes back, is he going to be dead? And the guy's like, no, well, it's a new horror era, so probably you'll come back and find me dead. And it, like, jokes like that kind of work because it is kind of
the way that it goes. Well, that's what Scream is about, yeah.
But the problem is by the time you get to the end of the movie, you're actually almost bored, or at least me and Celine were, because it's like it just plays out like any other. Like, they've tried to make it aware that all these horror rules have changed, but do the exact same storyline. So it's like, you know what's going to happen, and you've seen that many horror movies that by playing by the standardized rules, we don't get anything. But the problem is, you have...
There's that studio phone. It has to go off at least once in every show.
Just wait for it.
It'll just shut up in a second.
Or not.
Just ignore it, everybody.
Yeah,
I know,
so,
I do.
Anyway, my problem with the film was by the time we got to the conclusion, and the killer's speech is usually kind of, in a way, the actual kind of summing up of what the horror director is kind of trying to say with the film. Like, Scream 1 was talking about the original rules, and wow, somebody really wants
to talk to us.
Yeah. And, you know, you have these original rules, and you're trying to create, you know, sort of like an original story. I can't concentrate on anything on. And by the time we kind of got to the end of this film, and we had the explanation from the director, it was kind of more a direction at the viewers as opposed
Sorry,
to the film.
Sorry, James Milver says someone is trying to call to say, what's your favorite scary movie?
And again, this was another thing that really irritated me in the movie because it was just used over and over again. And yeah, fine, if you're trying to make a statement on the way that we've gotten, the fact that we all just reuse and recycle these kind of concepts because everyone keeps saying it, you know, people ringing other people, practically joking people, and then the real calls, and it's like, it just got lost in a sea of just unnecessary commentary on viewers.
Yeah.
It was like this personal attack on horror fans, because the ending kind of had this feeling, and this isn't a spoiler, of kind of like, the fans are what's going to, you know, sort of like drive these films to get worse and worse. And like, it's like, you know, where do we distinguish the line? And, you know, sort of like eventually it'll just become live broadcast, you know, sort of horror on the internet and all this sort of stuff. And I just sat there and went, you've become the exact people that used to insult your films when you first made them. It's like, no, we haven't got worse and worse and worse. We just need things that are different to be able to get the same sort of a feeling. We're trying to change horror, and, you know, Gornos are, you know, a style of horror. And it's like, by you saying that this is going to get worse and worse and you're to blame and, you know, the internet and all this sort of stuff, you're basically, in essence, turning around and doing what all of those archaic people did in the 70s and 80s to you and turn around and went, oh, these horror movies, they're disgusting. It's like,
It's become what it's mocking, basically.
Exactly. And it doesn't distinguish the lines clearly enough, so it does come off as a statement. Also, there's this really unnecessary commentary that is in films at the moment about bloggers and the fact that we're all this, like, pretentious 16-year-old kind of people and we all have no care for the subject material that's out there or anything like this. And there are these characters in this film, again, it's not the first time I've seen them. But there's also a commentary on them as well. And I kind of just look at it and I go, you guys just have no idea what we are and what we are. We are true film fans.
It's almost sounding a little bit Armand White-ish, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like when you actually sit down and watch it, everyone in my row just look pissed off at the end. Because it's kind of, it's almost a fuck you for being into my films.
Yeah.
That's
so
the way
in our chat room, Callisynth in our chat room has said maybe Craven hates fans and this is his way of letting us know.
Well, and you know what? Fine, but just don't expect me to pay for another one of your films.
Yeah, that's a shame because look, I think Scream 1 was an exceptional film. I think it was a really fresh, vibrant film that came out of nowhere and everybody went, wow, this is just fantastic fun, you know? And they've progressively gone downhill. Because Scream 2 was okay, but, you know, it wasn't as good as the first one. Scream 3, I thought, was really disappointing. You know.
And the one last point I want to make on the film is one thing that I felt really kind of sick of is I got to this point with the film where I started going, why do we have to have such a complicated system for who the killer is? Why do we have to throw in all these red herrings? It's like, can't you just have a story that tells itself well enough that we can avoid, like, having to have these?
It's because they were so clever in the first one, they're trying to up themselves and everything.
I know, but it doesn't work, because it's like, by the fourth one, I've stopped trying to guess because I just don't give a shit anymore. It's usually someone that I don't even know about, like a long-lost brother or sister.
Well, that's the problem I had with Scream 3, where Scream 3's ending was so improbably stupid.
You can guess the ending, and I did guess it before it came along. Like, I guessed who the killer was. And I guessed that there was going to be the situation that they kind of allude to, because I was kind of like, one of these people in the room, it does this kind of whodunit thing at one stage where it's like one of the people in this room will be responsible as well as a killer. Like, they're just a small spoiler, but there are two killers, and this isn't the first time they've done that.
Yeah, the first
and
film also, had that. Spoilers
and
the first
again,
one.
A lot of what you're going to get in this film relates back to the first
right.
one. So it was obvious that was going to happen. Characters go missing from scenes. It was good enough to pick it up, but then there's all these unnecessary red herrings that don't even work. They're like superimposed camera work to try and make someone look creepy, and I'm just like, why? Yeah. Why did you have to go there with it? It's like, just let the story play out and let us enjoy it for what we used to enjoy horror movies for, which is a storyline about us worrying about a group of people that were slowly getting picked off. Like, you were supposed to relate to that group, and you're supposed to want that group. Everyone in this film, including the original cast, apart from Dewey was awesome. Apart from him, everyone else in this film is a pretentious asshole, and I didn't care if any of them survived. They were all just, the characters from the old series were just like, I'm still here, and he hasn't killed me yet, so I'm going to keep going. And all the new cast were just like, we're little weeny, whiny teenagers, and there's no one to like.
Red shirts.
Yeah, I know, but the problem is that they're all red shirts. And then who do you root for? It's like, horror movies, you have to have the character that you wanted to survive. And, you know, whether it was the jive-talking black guy in the 80s that you really wanted to survive, even then, you knew there was a very slim chance he was going to make it. Or maybe it
unless it was a George A. Romero film.
Again, and it's that kind of a system. It's like, it didn't matter for me who dies or who doesn't. Your base establishing point in any horror film for it to work is I have to care about the person that's being chased.
Yes.
And I didn't. So, utterly, wouldn't suggest it to anyone, and it makes the entire series fail.
Is it going to be worth catching up on DVD, though?
I think you'll want to watch it to finish off the series, but I think you're going to be decidedly disappointed.
Fair enough. Oh, that damning praise indeed.
Yes. Look, Dave, it doesn't matter if I think you're going to watch it or not. You're still going to watch
it. I'm going to watch it, yeah. No, and I'll get around to it. But for our listeners out there, you're saying don't bother.
No.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so that's Scream, and that doesn't sound like it's a particularly good finish to a promising franchise,
absolutely.
Is what it was. Hmm. And then it kind of just took a nosedive.
Yeah.
I pulled some facts for you, so just thought I'd see if we think that this might actually continue going as a franchise. According to this, it said Scream 4 currently worldwide has made 87. This is all from boxofficemojo.com. In 4 weeks has made $87 million at the box office for its $40 million budget. Now, before you start thinking, wow, that's actually quite successful. It's doubled its budget. If you go back, Scream 1 made $173 million on a $14 million budget. Scream 2 made $172 million on a $24 million budget. And Scream 3 made $161 million on a $40 million budget. Scream 4 is failing. As far as budgetary to return is concerned, nobody's interested.
No, because it's like, the biggest problems that you've got is you don't have to one-up yourself to win. And this is the problem. It's like, it's almost like Wes Craven has forgotten what made horrors awesome. It's like the only horrors we cling to anymore in this giant sea of shit that comes out is we cling to an original concept. And that's all we have left. And we, it talks in this thing about all the remakes and which remakes work and which ones don't. No, none of them worked. All of the remakes that you've done of these horror films, like Texas Chainsaw and stuff like this, are soulless efforts. It's like, you've got this big budget, you've got these big budgets, you've got these actors that I'm sure are really good at screaming, you've got a lot of blood and gore, but what you're missing is that your film looks like an episode of Supernatural those original films.
And that is Sweet Pea's point. She says Scream 4 should have been a straight-to-DVD movie.
Exactly, and this is the whole thing. Like, a show like Supernatural takes the piss out of its genre while doing it because we all loved it because it was stupid, right? But it's an episodic thing, it's on TV, it's all big budget, and you get to revisit these famous concepts as you go along this trip.
Yeah.
You meet Hookman, you meet, you know, all these things that you've seen in these famous horror movies, and it's your same guys over and over again. And that's the only reason that it works. The problem is you've now got a generation of people that follow that kind of a concept and think that something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre works, whereas it feels like one of the bad episodes of Masters of Horror.
Hmm.
It's like horror is supposed to scare you, and if it doesn't scare you, it's either supposed to provide like a concept you can follow, like something fun and, you know, sort of obviously just people trying to survive.
Yep.
Or it's got to go and, you know, just make you feel squeamish. And I'm happy to accept that some gornos work.
Yeah.
Because the original Hostel, you guys can all hate it as much as you want, it's still a horrifying movie to watch, and it is still horror in that reason. But yeah, Scream 4
not
is
a pleasant
just
film though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Scream 4 is in essence trying to pay homage to those films, but no one wants those films paid homage to because they're all shit.
Fair enough. Harsh words indeed. All right, let's move on. So that's a big no for Scream 4, people. Okay, so pay attention. All right, keeping score. Let's go to feature film review number 2. Now, this is the one I saw that Josh didn't get to see.
Yes.
excuse me. I went to see Fast 5, the new film directed by Justin Lin and written by Chris Morgan based on characters created by Gary Scott Thompson. It stars Vin Diesel, Paul Walker, Dwayne Johnson, Jordana Brewster, Tyrese Gibson, Chris Ludacris Bridges, Sun Kang, Matt Schultz, Gal Gadot, and Joaquin De Almeida. Now, if this all sounds familiar to you, it's because they have literally pulled the cast of all surviving cast members from the previous Fast and the Furious movies and put them all into one movie together and then added The Rock for good measure. According to IMDb, it says Dominic and his crew find themselves on the wrong side of the law once again as they try to switch lanes between a ruthless drug lord and a relentless federal agent. Federal agent would be Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
Here's the trailer, and I will point out that the big Jerry Bruckheimer shot at the end where they're all walking down the beach, you're going to see this in the trailer, is not in the movie. All right, so I'll say that straight up front. So here's the trailer for Fast 5.
So I see you've all met.
What's this all about, Dom?
Yeah, man, why'd you drag us halfway around the world?
Because we got a job.
It's a stealth mission. We'll be in and out before they even know we were there.
We're talking about breaking into a police station.
This is crazy. This is $100 million.
You say what?
I'm down.
Is all this really necessary to apprehend two men?
One's a former federal officer, spent 5 years in deep cover. The other one's a professional criminal. Escape prison twice. We find them, we take them as a team, and we bring them back. And above all else, we don't ever, ever let them get into cars.
We just went from the middle of the most wanted list to the very top. You gotta keep running now.
Running ain't freedom.
You're going down, Toretto.
Big mistake.
This just went from Mission Impossible to Mission in Freak Insanity.
Doesn't change a thing. Chances are, sooner or later, we're gonna end up behind bars or buried in a ditch somewhere. But not today.
You got gotta love the obligatory hero shot at the end. That's not even
Man,
in the film.
Man, you gotta have the hero shot, otherwise it's not a real film.
It's almost like lining up the entire cast and saying, "See, we got them all."
Just in case you didn't notice all those people in the trailer.
All right, so let me start by saying that I saw Fast and the Furious, The Fast and the Furious, way back 10 years ago when it came out, and I thought it was fun. It was silly. It was lots of cars.
It was like the anthem film of like my youth, because yeah. I lived in a small town where all people did was soup up their cars and then drive around the very small area we had as a main city and just drive around, usually with one police car at the front and one at the back to make sure they didn't speed. But they would just all drive at reasonable speeds, pumping reasonable sound because they couldn't get it too loud because of the cop at the front or the back.
Yep.
So all these kids dreamed of doing was getting out somewhere and driving fast and doing illegal street racing. This film was definitely a bad influence. And, yeah, it became huge. It was such a big movie at the time.
Yeah, and I can actually tell you how big that movie was. I've got the stats on this one, too.
Well, there we go.
Fast and the Furious 1 took $207 million at the box office worldwide. Now, it was... is this the right one? Yeah, Fast and the Furious 1, $207 million. Now, it obviously was immediately going to spawn a sequel. The amount of money it made back, everybody went, fast cars are in, everybody was making clone films, we had Torque and a whole bunch of other stuff came out, everybody wanted to do car films, and so of course an inevitable sequel came out. And I quite enjoyed Fast and the Furious. I thought Fast and the Furious was just good junky fun, you know? And then Too Fast, Too Furious came out. Now, Too Fast, Too Furious is junk. It is just awful. And it's so funny because John Singleton is a good director. This is the guy who started his career by doing Boys in the Hood. And you sit there and go, what the hell happened to you? You know? Now, I actually sat down this week and watched all five Fast and the Furious films in a row.
Dude,
I watched
effort put one, in.
I watched all four films and then went to the cinema to see the fifth one. So they're fresh in my mind at this point. And I can tell you right now that, first of all, this has already been talked about a lot, but we'll make sure this is very clear. Number three is actually set after number five. So if you watch them in chronological order, I watch them in production order, but if you watch them in chronological order, it's 1, 2, 4, 5, 3. Okay? Tokyo Drift is right at the end. Okay? Yeah. So... And they are ranging in quality, and it's very interesting to watch these films all together, because part two was so bad that you sit there and go, I cannot believe they actually made any more of these after that, because it was just a terrible film. It was a stupid premise. The only thing that tied it to the original film was Paul Walker. They replaced everybody else in the cast, and it was just kind of a cash-in film. But it did make $236 million at the box office worldwide, and of course this was going to lead them to making another film. What's interesting about this is that they obviously didn't know what to do with this film, and this is why they made Tokyo Drift, which was the third one, which was a step in the right direction. It's a better film than part two. It's not as good as part one, but I can't help but think that as soon as I saw it, I went, this is the Karate Kid in Cars. And we're not talking about the original Karate Kid. We're talking about the remake of the Karate Kid, because basically it is about a American boy ending up in Tokyo, falling in with, you know, the street crowd, getting picked on by one of the local boys, and then having to have a car race to prove that he was, you know. So we're talking about Karate Kid, basically, right? And it had very little, if nothing, to do with the original Fast and the Furious films, except it was about fast cars. And spoilers, at the very end of the film, Vin Diesel makes an appearance.
Yeah.
Okay, just a small cameo right at the end, and that kind of ties it to the rest of the series. But the film made money, and I think this is what kind of shocked them, was they went, oh, this film made money, and so therefore Fast and the Furious is back alive again. Justin Lin, who directed that film, was brought back to do Fast and Furious, number four, which was a marked step in the right direction. Fast and Furious is actually not a bad film. It's a bit cheesy. It's a bit corny. Lots of CG work. But not a bad film, because they're kind of taking it in the heist movie direction rather than just lots of street racing. And I think that was the right thing to do, because the street racing has been done. And it's just more racing to race for race sake. Whereas taking into the idea...
Well, there's only so many times you can drive down a straight piece of track with stuff
that's
happening.
Right.
And
that's
it's like, and it's like there are too many car films out there. The only place to take it is onto the professional circuit, and no one gives a crap about that.
Absolutely.
And then you can't have the fun that you have.
So the
realistic thing is to keep the bad boy image of these guys in really fast cars, but then drive it somewhere.
Absolutely. And so to bring back Vin Diesel was the right move. So they brought back Vin Diesel, you bring back Paul Walker, you create a film that is tied directly to the first Fast and Furious and the second Fast and Furious, and basically say, this is them on, you know, the run, basically. We've got them. We've got Paul Walker back being a cop, which he was on the run in Too Fast, Too Furious. So he's back being an FBI agent. So it kind of, the formula was getting put back into place. And the film made a lot of money. And so everybody went, okay, so this is the right direction to go. And now we come up with Fast Five. Now, I've got to say right off the bat that I freaking love this film. All right. I thought this was what the film Faster with Vin Diesel wanted to be.
Yeah.
Okay. No, with Vin Diesel, with Dwayne Johnson, sorry. This was a fast-paced, balls-to-the-wall action film that is more akin to a James Bond movie than a Fast and Furious movie. This is about a heist, and it's about bringing this team together to pull off this heist. There is no scenes in this film of just illegal street racing for just illegal street racing's sake. They go to one at one point, and they talk about it, but you don't actually see the race, because that's not the plot of this film. The plot of this film is to steal something, right? And in fact, I think in overseas markets, it's actually called the Rio Job or something like that. It's called like Fast and Furious Rio Job or something like that, because it's all set in Rio, and it's all about them. They're going to do this heist so that they can stop running. If they can make enough money, they can go somewhere without extradition and just stop running, right? And so they decide to do this. Now, we throw into the mix The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, who's this badass federal agent who is the last resort. You call him in when all else fails, and he's got like this military team driving armored Humvees, and they're basically there to bring, and he's sporting the manliest super goatee of all time. And I mean, we're talking so much testosterone in this film, it is almost overwhelming. I said to Josh before the show started that I felt like over watching five of these films in a row, somebody's taken a huge syringe full of testosterone and has just injected it straight into my bloodstream. And my son, 11 years old, is watching the ones on video. He hasn't seen Fast Five, but he was watching the ones on video with me, and he was getting so into it. And he's not into cars, and he's sitting there every time they crash, he goes, "Whoa!" It's like I've never seen him like this before. It's like, and you just can't help yourself but getting caught up in this testosterone, petrol-fueled sensation. The film is fun. And all I'll say about Fast Five is you go there and you just have a blast. And now here's the most important thing. Justin Lin, who has also returned for this one more, so he's directed the last three in a row now, he decided that he wanted to go more physical.
Yeah.
He said that because the Fast and Furious films have always been laden with CG. Even the very first one, Rob Cohen, all the car movement stuff, cameras flying around cars, it's all been CG work. And it's worked all right, and it's gotten you through. Justin Lin wanted to put it practical. He wanted to actually do stunts. And yes, there is CG work in it, but it's more about enhancing what's going on rather than replacing it. So when you're seeing these cars take down these streets, and we're seeing, I haven't seen this many police cars smashed since the Blues Brothers, you know? And we're seeing real cars doing real stunts, tearing through. At one point, they drag that vault through a bank, and they literally just destroy the building. It's like, so you're seeing real heart pumping. And so it adds that sense of tension to it, because suddenly it feels real. You feel like you're on the ground.
It's that grounding sensation when you put something like that in it.
So I have to say, really highly recommended. Even if you haven't seen the other Fast and Furious films, I would say to you that you really need Fast and Furious. You really need the fourth film, because this film literally starts from the last frame of the fourth film. So you see the fourth film, it ends on a cliffhanger. It actually ends on this particular shot. This film picks up from exactly that point. And again, doesn't stop for 2 hours, 10 minutes. Does not stop. All right, just when you start to think this film is slowing down, they go back into another action sequence.
Yeah.
The other highlight of this film has got to be, you see a little bit of it in the trailer there, has got to be the fist fight between The Rock and Vin Diesel. This is like a steroid injection. I mean, we're seeing these two guys go head-to-head who are both badass plus, and it is so much fun to watch. I highly recommend this film. It's not Shakespeare, guys. This is not, we're not talking about it being like the best thing ever made, but it is a lot of fun, and that's really what it counts. If you like a good action film, this is a good action film, all right? So I do recommend you go out and see it just to have that injection, that infusion of adrenaline go through your body. It's good fun. All right, see you later, Sweet Pea, who is leaving our chat room apparently. All right, so that's my review of Fast Five. Go see it. I think Justin Lin's got a good career, and I think Fast Six has already been greenlit, so they'll be back at it soon enough. All right, and I will say there is a star in the making, by the way, guys. I like to point out stars in the making. Sung Kang, who plays Han in this film, who was also one of the stars of Tokyo Drift, is fantastic. Yeah. I want to see him do more. He's got a really nice charismatic energy to him, and he's effortless in what he does, and I just want to see more of him. So, and I will say that I actually really quite liked Ludacris. Chris Bridges.
Oh, dude, I love Ludacris, man.
He was quite funny in the second one, but he was wasted because the second one was such junk. They brought him back for this one, and he's a lot of fun in this. He's got some great lines.
He is actually an actor that I just want to see in more stuff. His like three or four scenes that he has in the movie Crash are probably my highlight moments of the entire thing, because he has this entire speech, which he does in perfect steam, about reverse racism. How, like, people are being too nice to him now because he's black. Mm. And then basically at the end of the conversation, he goes, "Now, why do you think people are like that?" And his friend goes, "Because we are going to go rob that person." And he's like, "Absolutely," and pulls out a gun. Honestly, tears of laughter. It's that good.
James from Melbourne is saying that Han, or the Sung Kang that I was talking about, is already a big deal in Hong Kong.
Yeah, no, but it'd be great to see him pulled across.
Absolutely. You know, he's been in three Fast and Furious movies now. I'd like to see more of him. I'd like to see him outside of Fast and Furious now.
Yeah.
Give him something else to do. Okay, so that's Fast Five. Go see it. It is worth having a look at. Unfortunately, I had to go see it at Greater Union, and I really do object to the ticket prices at Greater Union.
Don't like paying for movies.
All right, let's move on to some entertainment news. Josh, how are we doing for time? Oh, we're okay.
We're doing all right.
We're doing all right at the moment. Our friends over at Iron Sky...
Yeah.
Now, for those who don't or have caught up with us late and don't know the early story to this, this group, I believe they're, I'm going to insult them now. Are they Swedish? They're Swedish, aren't they?
I'm not going to make that statement in case I'm wrong. So
if I'm wrong, guys, correct me. Anyway, they've done something with, they've crowdsourced most of the budget for this film, which is really genius for them. They raised $4 million through crowdsourcing and other forms, and they've made this dark, satirical, to quote the director who we talked to at Supernova, you can see the video on our site. We've actually got the interview there. He said it was very Doctor Strangelovian in its style. It's kind of that very dark satirical humor. Science fiction comedy about Nazis escaping planet Earth in 1945 and living all this time on the dark side of the moon, and now they're basically coming back to invade Earth. And all the technology is kind of 40s looking, but science fiction, because, you know, they've been away for so long. Really ingenious idea. Great teaser trailer they showed us originally. They sent us a press release this week saying, here's the new teaser. And so we finally get to see some people talking and stuff. So I thought we'd play that teaser here. It's embedded at geekactually.com if you want to see it for our audio listeners. But this is, it's very short. Here's the new Iron Sky teaser. The most important thing is they also gave us a release date. Watch the end of the teaser. You'll see the release date.
Where are we from? Siegfried.
The Earth.
And when did we leave?
Brunhilde.
1945.
Wonderful. And where did we go?
The dark side of the moon!
Brilliant.
Und dann beginnen wir mit dem Blitzkrieg und fegen alle diese Untermenschen von der Erdkarte.
We come in peace!
Okay, so 4th of April 2012.
So excited about
is
that.
Is your release date. We come in peace. Come on. Spacefaring Zeppelins. Gotta love it.
Dude, I just can't get over what's his name, Udo Keller.
Udo Kier. Oh, he's fantastic.
He's just the perfect guy to play that role, because he's just creepy enough to sell it, yet aware of how to make it satirical. And it's just like that bit where he's trying to, he's like, meow, with the ship. Awesome.
I can't wait for this film. These guys are really, really nice guys. We got a chance to talk to them at Supernova last year. As I say, you can check out the interview with them. They're just so sweet. And I think this is going to be hot.
We are right there with you guys.
Absolutely. Keep those press releases coming. We will be there first day. All right. Other things in news this week. Remember Wonder Woman? Mm-hmm. The TV series that they're doing, that thing, you know, with Pelleggi.
Yeah.
Apparently NBC watched the pilot because the pilot's been finished now, and they basically went, nah, it's been rejected. It's not going to series.
Good.
So it's dead in the water, guys.
And for once, and remember this moment, the world out there that is everything TV and cinema related finally got it right.
They got it right.
They looked at it and went, I don't like it. They're not going
to
like it.
Now, what I really want is I want that pilot to be leaked on the internet so I can see it.
Yeah. I want to see how bad it was that it failed to impress these people. Yeah,
NBC basically rejected the pilot, saying that it wasn't very good. It was too David E. Kelly-ish, basically, because, you know, it's all, you know, whatever that means. Very Ally McBeal.
Yeah,
you know?
I would imagine.
And they were also incredibly concerned over the backlash that it's had from the costume right down to the story leaks down to everything else. And they basically said the fans are going to hate this.
Yeah.
So I say, good on you, NBC.
Well, they've just sat down and realistically thought about it for a second. Your fans aren't interested. It doesn't sell. And the humor is something we did 10 years ago. It's like,
apparently the problem doesn't lie with Pelleggi herself. Apparently she was fine. The series sucked.
Yeah. No, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It will be the humor will be that 10-year-old Ally McBeal style. And you're not going to win fans either. So there's no marketable way to get this out there.
Mm. Now, what's James Melvin says, Dave, you're going to get the thing greenlit with that attitude. James Melvin also says, thank Christ it's been done. I Am Ozface says, yay. See, I mean, that's the thing. Nobody wanted this series to happen. All right. So the next thing we have in news is another trailer. Remember the Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie?
Yeah.
Real Steel. Real Steel. One. They got a new trailer this week.
And you've seen it, so is it any better?
It's different, actually, is what I want to say. It's not so much that it's better. It's like a different film all of a sudden. You know, the first trailer was all fighting and it all looked very serious. Yeah. This makes it look like a kid's film.
Oh, okay.
So have a look at this. This actually, they've introduced more characters. There's more dialogue, so we get more story. And it looks like a different film. And actually, I got to say, I kind of want to see it. Funnily enough, here we go.
Charlie, where is my money?
Buddy, I got your money. It's ready.
Oh, good. But Charlie, you're
losing your belt.
Wait, Charlie, hey. I can't hear what you're saying.
What was he like? As a boxer? Charlie was the top contender, number 2 in the world. Then the fight game changed.
Coming with you.
No, you're not.
I'm either coming with you or you're fishing for your keys in the sewer.
Oh my god, that was close.
Whoa!
Stubborn kid.
This ain't a video game. This is for real. Let's make some money! No,
I just need a little loan.
As much as I like you, dude, you're a bad bet, brother.
Give it up, Charlie. You got nothing left.
What are we looking for?
Anything I could use to put a fighting robot together.
I think there's a whole robot in there.
Never seen anything like it before.
Can we get him a fight?
He's a sparring bot, built to take a lot of hits, but never dishing out any real punishment.
His name is Adam. Get him a fight.
You know you're bringing him home in pieces, right?
Whoa, whoa, whoa! He's smaller and weaker. He's gonna get his ass kicked.
I need you to teach him to box.
Are you kidding me?
You know this fight game inside and out. He needs your moves, your commands.
I can't.
Yes, you can.
And I know I've done all kinds of wrong by this kid. I just like to do one thing right. Right uppercut!
Great fight, fellas.
Remember this name, Adam.
Adam!
This bot is one to watch.
I'm trying to see a better side to you here, Charlie.
It's not easy.
We can't win, can we?
We'll see.
Well, that really is a different film.
I actually want to see that film.
That I'll go see.
That looks like Rocky with robots.
Oh, exactly what I was going to say. It's just your standard boxing story, but with mechanical machines. And, like, being a geek is... Very little you can do to...
Dagbert in our chat room says, "Yeehaw, fighting robots!" Oh, love it. All right. So, yeah, no, I actually want to see that film. That actually looks pretty good. Yeah. That was not like the trailer from... Now, apparently the pre-buzz on this film has been so positive that the production company, I think it's Universal, I think it is. I forgot. I missed the beginning. Has already commissioned the writers to write the sequel. So they're already paying the writers to write the sequel. So, yeah, they're really...
So in this one, is this the one where... He failed in this movie to beat the bad guy, so he goes back and beats him now? Is that the way? Are we gonna go 100% Rocky?
When does he go to Russia?
I will break you.
All right. So look, I'm down for it. I think for big fight and robots. When I first heard about this, I thought it was the most stupid thing I'd ever heard. Mm. When I saw the first trailer, I kind of went, but this, I'm kind of down with this trailer. I think this is looking pretty good. But what I'm down with even more is X-Men First Class. Mm. Now, everything we have seen about X-Men First Class has been hot so far. They released a bunch of character clips, which we embedded at the site a couple weeks ago, which were really good. They showed like highlights. Here's a new one that just came out this week. This is a little bit longer than the other ones. This is actually a TV spot, and it's one scene from the film. And as soon as I saw this, I went, this is going on the show. This is Professor Xavier trying to explain to politicians about mutation. Mm. So, I thought this was actually a really cool scene.
Individuals with extraordinary abilities may already be among us.
McTaggart, you really think that some crackpot scientist is going to make me believe in sparkly dames and vanishing men?
I didn't really expect you to believe me. One of the many spectacular things my mutation allows me to do is that I can read your mind.
Are you going to ask us to think of a number between 1 and 10 now?
No, Agent Stryker, although I could ask you about the Jupiter missiles America are currently placing in Turkey.
You brought a damn spy into this facility!
How's that for a magic trick?
Best I've ever seen.
For our audio listeners, that was Mystique standing up and changing shape suddenly to stop the crowd. That is a great looking little scene.
Oh, absolutely.
I love Oliver Platt.
Yeah, I was about to say, dude, I'm going to see that movie just to see that man act again.
I love it. Oliver Platt.
He's just that guy that stands in the background and utters that one line that you're like,
nah, there he is. Great. All right, so that's our film news. We truncated the film news down because we had two reviews. We're keeping it very short because we also have a list of five that we want to get through. This week's list of five is five movie franchises worth spending your time with. Mm-hmm. And I thought we would also make this kind of like a public service announcement at the same time because not every series is perfect every film. So we'll also give you the hints on where...
I would go as far as to say every single one on my list is not.
No, that's right. And so what we'll do is we'll give you the ideas of where to, like, lighten yourselves up and move around and so forth. All right. So you're number five.
I don't know how you can put that. Yeah, anyway, we'll come back to this. I'm going to be taking you up on one of your things. My number five is the George A. Romero series. Now, I am well aware that number four is a tragedy against
every...
That would be Land of the Dead. However, if you put all four together, yes, I am including the fourth one.
What about five and six?
Well, yeah, they're there as well. You could go
Diary of the Dead and Survival of the Dead.
Look, Diary of the Dead actually has some aura death scenes.
Okay.
Give it that.
Look, I actually have not seen Diary of the Dead.
It's one of those series where do the first three and watch the fourth one, not to see where it went and to cry, because you probably will.
Hmm.
But it's interesting to kind of see where he wanted to take it. He's a very interesting chap. Whether or not you like him... or you like where he's going with movies or what he does at the moment with things. He's in the latest Call of Duty expansion. Do you know that?
I didn't know that. Oh, yes, I did know that. Yes.
Yep, no.
So is Keith David, apparently.
Dude, there is so many people in it. Sarah Michelle Gellar.
This sounds cool. Pity I don't play Call of Duty.
Exactly. No, and I've already traded my copy in, so it's like, oops. Anyway, the man has direction like no other director. And it's like my personal favorite would always be Dawn of the Dead.
Me too.
Celine's is the second one,
Dawn of the Dead.
No, sorry, the Second one's Dawn of the Dead?
Yeah.
Oh, of course, because Night of the Living
Dead. Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead, yeah. Yeah, Day of the Dead is...
I have a particular soft spot for Night of the Living Dead because of the way it was made.
But it's also a progressional thing. It's like as you go through them, it's almost like they kind of... every one is a homage to kind of its generation's kind of movie as well. I mean, like, it gets more gory as it goes along. There's a lot of stuff.
I really admire the filmmaking in Night of the Living Dead because I really admire... because they were working on such a no budget.
Yeah.
He employed all sorts of tricks where he did things like he'll make the camera like looking out from behind couches and stuff. Mm. So there's this sense of paranoia and claustrophobia all the way through our film.
Yeah.
It's actually really, it's really effective. It's very low budget and it's very dated by today's standards, but it is actually still very effective.
And the thing that's interesting about it as well is how they portray the acting, because it's like, it is done in a way that's almost that 1950s-esque kind of a style of how we used to speak and stuff like that in film, in that thing. And it's like, you would mistake it for bad acting if you weren't looking close at it.
Mm.
But it's like, together, it actually makes a trilogy and also, you know, the fourth one I allow in, because it's like, there are moments of that that I understand what he's trying to say about it.
I quite like Dennis Hopper in that as well. I think he's nuts.
Yeah, exactly. So I think overall, the four films actually make quite a good... quite a good series.
Yeah, I actually got to say, though, like you, my favorite is the second one. I think Dawn of the Dead is an exceptional horror film that is much more than what it seems at first watch. So well worth having a look at. And what Zack Snyder missed in the remake. That's a debatable thing. I mean, some people really like Zack Snyder's, but I think the original Dawn of the Dead is an exceptional film.
I think they're
film.
Very different films.
They are very different films. All right, my number five is going to be an odd one for you. And the reason I was thinking about it, and I tossed it in and tossed it out, and I thought, no, I'm going to put it in just because it does fit the concept of franchise. Mm. And that is the Kevin Smith View Askew films.
Mm.
Now, they're all very different films, but they all have the same characters repeated over and over and over again. And so you sit there and look at it and go, even Chasing Amy, which seems detached from the View Askew films, suddenly Jay and Silent Bob turn up in the last scene.
Mm.
And then the characters from Chasing Amy turn up again later in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. So you sit there and go, he's managed to keep this universe, this View Askew universe, even though the films are all actually telling very different stories. And it kind of really does encapsulate what a franchise is. Not sequels, not necessarily, well, they can be sequels, but not necessarily sequels, but just within the same vein of itself. Not all the View Askew films are entirely successful as films, but there are enough of them in there where you sit there and go, it is worth having a look at them to see the bridges, even for the good ones. Like, the first Clerks is a really exceptional starting out film.
Mm.
Chasing Amy is so much better. Yeah. Dogma is fantastic. And Clerks 2 has some good moments in it. I'm not.
But it's almost. It's the other thing that I constantly say to people is you have to think of Clerks 2 as kind of like the wave goodbye to everything you knew View Askew. It's like that was him signing off.
Yeah, he was trying to sign off with Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, but he had that one more story he wanted to tell, which was his original characters from way back when he started. Now at his current age.
Yeah.
And he wanted to kind of say, well, now that I'm this old, where are they at that point? And he at one point, somebody was talking about Clerks 3. He's not interested in Clerks 3. He said this in an interview. Mm. He's not really interested in coming back to these characters anymore. He's done. And I say good for him because I think it's done.
I don't think 3 would work.
No, I don't think it would either.
Finishes off and it finished off nicely.
I don't care what anyone says. For me personally, Mallrats is the weakest of the films. Mm. I know there's people who disagree with that.
Yeah.
I just think Mallrats is kind of, and even he actually comments on Mallrats by saying it was a studio cash-in.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's fine. But I think for me personally, the two standout films in the middle of all this is Chasing Amy and Dogma.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think we have a lot to thank him for almost bringing the comic world into, because for me, the concept of having Stan in there telling a story was such a moment for me as a fan of comics as an idea.
Yeah.
And him having this thing to say kind of made us all aware of that. And we had sort of Spider-Man coming out at the same time. It's like he was part of that whole rise into pulling comic books into standard life.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where it's no longer a laughable thing. It's now an accepted practice. It's like, yeah. So there are things about that film that I think he did really well.
Mm. And there are some things he didn't do so well. But overall,
there are a lot of things.
Overall, I've actually rewatched all of Kevin Smith's entire catalog over this last couple of months, and I've really enjoyed. Going back over his world. So, anyway, okay. So that's my number five. Your number four.
My number four is a series which definitely defines the concept of you will be watching a lot of shit while you go through it. But the Hellraiser series is something that you need to watch start to finish.
I actually pondered it, but I can't get past... I like the first two.
Yeah.
And then after that, they just
kind of... Oh, three is garbage, but it does set up the premise of explaining out some of the things you need to know for the following ones about the fact that he can he can basically recreate his Cenobites. Like, these other ones with him. There is a lot of plot points that will kind of just make you go, what? Four, even though it is a...
it's awful.
No, four. I love four.
Oh, really?
I love four because as much as, like, it didn't even have a director, it's a...
Alan Smithy.
Alan Smith.
Alan Smithy. Good old Alan Smithy.
Because God knows what happened on that thing because there is a lot to go through. But it's kind of like, it explains how it's made. It kind of finishes off the first four. So that's kind of the franchise. But then, if you're a real trooper, there's another three to watch.
It kind of reeks of The Howling, though.
They are the Howling style films. Yeah. Where you watch them just to kind of like add on like a little bit of punishment to yourself. But I actually like the way that the series kind of wraps up.
So really, it's the first four. You could skip the rest, but the first.
I don't think you should though, because if you can make it through to the end of four, you're a trooper already. So keep driving, because there's enough interesting deaths and enough interesting ideas to make me still laugh at the whole series. So, look, if you're a horror fan, you're not a horror fan until you've watched all eight, in my opinion.
Fair enough.
That's like one of my dipsticks to check how much of an actual horror fan you are. It's like, how many Hellraisers are
there? I actually have all the Hellraiser movies, and I have scanned through the last three.
No,
it doesn't matter. And I can't do it. I can't actually sit and watch them. All right. My number four is the Rocky franchise. I think, you know, they are progressively get worse in quality as they go through. But there is something like the Fast and the Furious movies where you cannot help yourself but just kind of cheer along with what's going on, because they are just testosterone-laden fight matches. And look, number one, I think, is a brilliant film. I've said this many times on the show. I think it is actually a classic and a great film, to its own credit.
Yep.
Number two is relatively weak. Number three was a lot of fun. We introduced the whole Mr. T character. And I think number three was really what kind of brought the whole series back to everybody's mind. Number four stretches into ludicrous territories when he takes on the Russians, you know, as Rocky, and has to fight Ivan Drago. Number five was pretty atrocious. The retirement one.
Yeah.
But I will say the Rocky Balboa, the last one that he came back and did just a couple of years ago, was actually a damn good film. And it was actually a damn good drama about this aged boxer who was lost in his life. And I actually really enjoyed it. And I thought this is actually a really nice way to finish this. And if he does any more, it's a mistake. But you could really skip five and just watch Rocky Balboa as the last of the series, because you didn't really need that fifth one. That fifth one was a really bad film.
Yeah.
And overall, though, the Rocky films are good fun, and you'll actually find yourself when you watch one, you go, okay, I got to see what happens next.
Yeah.
So I quite enjoy the Rocky films, even though I think only the first one is a true masterpiece. All right, you're number three.
Again, I will again state that all of my series are not necessarily that good, but I just think they are incredible, and they are all horror films as well. But they are all really good series to watch to get an idea of a full lore, because having an idea of a full lore is a bit like having Lord of the Rings. You know, it's sort of like if you know everything about it, even if it's just the films you've watched, you have this incredible knowledge when you go back through another time and a time after that where you can piece together where all these ideas came from.
Mm-hmm.
Friday the 13th is my third one. And I left it off and it got brought to my attention just as I walked back into the room, and I put it back on because it has some really shocking moments. There are like triumphs of cinema, like having Alice Cooper do the soundtrack for the fifth one, which is a mess.
But see, fifth one or sixth one? Which is the one with the psychic girl?
No, that's seven.
Is that seven?
No, seven or
no,
eight.
No, not the Psychic Girl. That's not the one I'm thinking of. The one where he's brought back to life with the lightning at the beginning.
That's that one. That's five.
That's five. I like that one.
Dude, it's a mess, and it has
I like it because it is actually really funny.
Oh, dude, it is an absolute triumph of comedy. Yeah. Like, the line, my favorite line in that entire film is where the cop, for no apparent reason, they just seem to hate the main character, points this laser-guided pistol at his head and goes, where the dot goes, shapow. To this day, I have no concept of what that means or what it was supposed to mean in the film's context, but an absolute laugh riot. And also him driving away from the cops with Alice Cooper playing is just the most uncoordinated set of music-to-film relations ever made.
Funnily enough, it's actually directed by a comedy director, which gives you an idea why. It is a mess.
And look, the series, they had no idea where to take it and what to do with it. I mean, that was very
obvious. I believe the same director directed the film Date with an Angel, so it gives you an idea on in his career. So,
but yeah, no, you've got all these sort of things to work through. But when you get past that, there's this great lore of kind of like the first three, and in the first three, you're not sure if he really actually died. And then four is kind of a mystery because the four has some really bad scenes, but then you kind of get a good finale to it. And then it's like five. Five is a mess, and then six and seven, and then you watch Returns, and then you watch X. It's like, but when you get to the end of it, there is this wholehearted feeling of kind of, I did it all.
Now, do you count Freddy versus Jason in the lore?
Yes, because it's perfect. It fits perfectly within the lore, and it works to be after the last one, but before X.
Right.
And X can happen whenever, because I'm not even sure if they talk about dates in that film.
Right.
But it wouldn't
matter. It's also set sometime in the future, who knows. So
exactly. So it fits within the lore, so therefore it works on both worlds.
And for those who don't know, Jason X is the one where Jason goes to space.
Yes. A true cinema gem.
All right. My number three is the Lethal Weapon series.
Yeah,
I actually just had the pleasure of rewatching all four Lethal Weapon films in a row, like I did with Fast. It was actually the series I did just before I did Fast and Furious.
Yeah,
And it's really fun going back and watching these films. This was pre Mel Gibson melting down. This was when he was first. I mean,
he was still melting down. I'm sorry.
Well, he was, but Lethal
he's
Weapon,
been melting down his entire life.
Lethal Weapon 1 was the film that basically made him a star in America. And it's really interesting going back and watching Richard Donner's series of films because Part 1 is a great action film. Part 2 is one of those rare beasts where it's probably as good as the original and has some of the best bad guys put on film. I mean, putting South Africans, the white South African supremacists as the bad guys was just inspired, you know?
Yeah.
Part 3, unfortunately, is a bit weak. It felt like a bit of a cash-in that had kind of a weak bad guy. It's got some good moments, and it's not a terrible film, but it's just a bit weak compared to the rest of the series. But then they came back with Part 4 for, like, the final sign-off, and we introduced Jet Li to basically the Western world, because at that point he was a big star in Hong Kong, but had not really made it into the Western world yet. And he was just badass as the bad guy. And I really enjoyed Part 4. I found myself kind of going, yeah, bye guys. You know, this is the end, you know?
And again, it's the same sort of thing at the end of, you know, any sort of decent franchise. Because I'm sorry, but there aren't that many good franchises around. There may be good trilogies, but franchises is difficult. You will have failures.
Yes.
But it's at the end of it, whether or not you can get there and actually feel like you enjoyed every moment.
I enjoyed the run.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's like a TV series. That's what a franchise is.
And you go, there's some good moments, there's some bad moments, but overall, I enjoyed the ride.
Yeah.
And I had a good time. And the other thing I will say about Lethal Weapon 4, slight spoilers for a film that's, 10 years old now, but I love the end credits on that film. And here's a situation where you stay for the end credits because it's really clever. They're obviously saying goodbye in this film. And so the end credits is like a photo album and it's the family album for the entire series. And so every single person that is going by in the credits is listed in photos.
Yeah.
And so the camera is panning across these pages of a photo albums and it's listing everybody. So all of the cinematographers, everybody is getting their photo put in this album. And then it's after they finish the key crew, the photos keep coming, and they're from the entire series of films, all the behind-the-scenes photos of shooting this entire series. And you just think, that's such a nice way to wrap this up. It's like the whole family of this Lethal Weapon franchise. And it was actually really, really satisfying four films to sit through. So, yeah, that's my... Lethal Weapon is definitely up there as a franchise well worth having a look at. And still holds up today. It still holds up. It's a little dated in places, but it actually holds up fairly well. Mel Gibson's mullet, as an example.
Yes.
Your number, where are you up to? Number two.
My number two is the Alien Quadrilogy.
Didn't quite make my list, but I can appreciate that.
Yeah, it's the same sort of reason behind all mine. It's like, essentially, whether or not you liked three, which Dave didn't, if you put the four together, though, they
Did
are...
Did you say that anymore under your breath?
if you put all four together and watch them in one go, though it is a descending world you kind of go into, there are all these interesting things that you find out, and all these interesting art concepts and all these ideas. So it's like, it's almost... I condition three and four to being a bit like watching behind the scenes, because it's kind of like expanding on the world. And it's like, that's what all good franchises do. They expand on what you know, and they give you these other storylines into the series. And it's like, one and two are definitely the good ones.
Yeah, fantastic.
Three is definitely a sliding scale below either of those two. And then four just slides it right off the map. It's like, and it's gone. But you kind of get to the end of four and you're happy that you watched all four, because it does kind of continue. I still want a fifth Aliens film.
Well, we're getting it with Prometheus.
Yeah, so. No, but I want a fifth Aliens one. I want one that ends the story. I want one that actually finishes off Sigourney Weaver's story, because you get to the end of four and it feels unfinished. Because there's no...
I have to say, you know what's really interesting about four? I actually quite liked Alien Resurrection. In fact, I go one step further. I liked it more than I liked three, because I really didn't like three at the time. And I actually liked four more, but I hate the ending of four. And I think that's the biggest problem, is the fact that I actually quite liked the film until the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I think the last 10 minutes of that film is a huge failure. And it's as soon as the baby surfaces, you know? As soon as that baby surfaces, the film just goes off the rails, right? And you just think, what the hell were they thinking, you know? Yeah. But I really like the film. I kind of like the design, and I like the I like the style of it. I like the characters. It's very French. It's got that very strange French feel to it. I love that underwater sequence, you know? There's moments in that film I really like that I liked much more than I liked Alien 3. But I just hated the ending of that film.
No, but that's what I'm saying. If they had have finished it with a thing of her having to sacrifice herself or whatever, it's like, until she dies, like physically dies, or actually dies in the films, there's no resolution yet. And it feels that way. It's like Prometheus or whatever, you know, this new film is going to be, will keep a story going, but I just hope one day they do a fifth. It doesn't have to be good. Like any of these series on my list, they all eventually descend into chaos, but most of them will finish it.
Yeah.
Or at least have a finishing
film. James from Melbourne was saying that the original idea, and I think we've all read this article now, that the original idea for part three was that she lands on the wooden monastery planet with the monks and everything.
Yeah.
Incredible production. It was Vincent, what's his name? The New Zealand director. Vincent Ward was going to do it. I think that would have been at least a more interesting film for me. I don't know if it would have been better, but it would have been more interesting.
Yeah, and again, this is all I really need from that series is I need closure, because you get to the end of the fourth film and like you leave and that's the fourth film, but there feels like there should be more.
Yeah, I don't know if I actually want them coming back to it though. I think it's kind
of I don't care if it's shit or anything. The world will watch
it. You just want to end
it. Look, dude, I've seen Jason Goes to Hell. I've seen Jason Goes to Hell, which is kind of apparently where it was supposed to finish for good, right?
I think it was supposed to finish at
part
three.
I know. You don't have to tell me about the lore of these films, but this was the one where it was like, that's it.
Yeah.
And it's still, it's crap, but it was nice to watch them kill him. You know, like, kill him.
Yeah.
And then he came back. But the point was, I've got that film to make me feel like at some stage they finished it. And then, you know, whatever happened afterwards, it's like the Hellraiser series. They finish it at four, then it keeps going. What those are for, they're like side stories or fan-made fiction or whatever. I watch them just because I love the series. But you've got that kind of finish.
That's fair. That's fair. All right, my number two on this is the Bourne films. Is this the one you wanted to debate with me?
The Bourne films? Yes.
Yeah?
That's a trilogy.
Not necessarily. Bourne Legacy is in production right
Doesn't
now.
Doesn't matter. We went through
it's
this.
It's not a trilogy, though, because each film has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Each film has its own self-contained story, and each film could stand as its own film. Except for the third one.
Totally disagree.
The third one, we've had this argument before, because I think the third one actually just starts and requires, has required viewing. Whereas yeah, part two could stand on its own.
Yes, no, but they're not three separate films, Dave, because two leads into three.
Yeah, but within each film, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Within each film, it has a plot that is resolved.
Three does not at all. Three starts at the end of two.
That's right, that's three. But I'm saying part one and part two both have beginning, middle, and an end.
Yeah, but they all lead into each other.
And they are self-contained.
Yep.
I stand by the fact that these can be individual films. I think that this is an exceptional set of films. And I'm
not going to argue that.
I'm curious to see what happens with part four. Because part four apparently is not about Jason Bourne. Mm-hmm. It's called Bourne Legacy. It's got Jeremy Renner stepping in as the lead, and apparently is happening in the same Bourne universe at the same time as the Bourne stuff, but it's a separate side story. Mm. And I think that's a really interesting idea. It's kind of like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of spy films. And will they interconnect is the question in some way or another. I'm not sure. But I think it's a franchise in the sense that they can keep going. Mm. And they could keep making Bourne films forever now that they've decided that we don't even need Bourne in the Bourne films.
Actually, I'm gonna go with Arseface on this and actually take you down another peg.
All right, go for it.
Because she said what the story of how they met and got into a relationship together, hence her death has meaning. I would also go one step further and say two doesn't make sense if you don't know what happened to Jason Bourne. The flashbacks aren't enough.
I think they are. I'd say that my problem was with three. Yeah. I actually feel, because I actually watched, once again, I watched these just recently as well, because I was watching them.
Dude, and I bought them on Blu-ray. I watched that shit like twice now.
Because part one, definitely standalone.
Absolutely. No
part
question.
Part two but has enough information in it that you can follow the story if you hadn't seen part one. Part three, however, has nary a flashback. It just throws you straight into the action, right? And basically, if you haven't seen part two in particular, then you're going to be lost as hell, right? But part two is standalone. You could actually start at part two if you had to. I wouldn't suggest it because I still think part one is the best film.
Cool. And the other thing I'm going to bring up is technically there isn't a franchise yet. It's still a trilogy. There's no film. There's no.
Yeah, but we said
film.
Franchise could be three or more films.
Oh, actually, I thought you said more than three.
No, I said three or more films.
That's cool. Have your stupid number two. I don't care.
I have some honorary mentions, so I have more than the five anyway, if you want to debate this.
Damn right I do.
All right, and you're number two. No, you're number one. Sorry.
Number one. The best, in my opinion, franchise to date, out of any films, if we're talking three or more, which is what my entire list is based on, is The Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare on Elm Street.
No, your list is based on more than three. You said three or more. You're going to hit me now, aren't you?
Nightmare on Elm Street, because even though there is a lot of mess in between some really stupid things and some damn camp stuff obviously made up by some producer somewhere along the way, I'm talking about three, and whoever you are going to hell for what you did.
Which one?
Three, the one with like the wizard and the nerd kid and stuff like that. No, good film, great deaths, really traditional.
Do you know who made part three? Chuck Russell. Mm. Do you know what Chuck Russell's other films are?
I love that smile.
He did the remake of The Blob, which was actually pretty good. Mm. He did The Mask with Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And he did Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm. This man didn't take horror that seriously.
And look, it wasn't that. It's just that those scenes feel kind of weirdly out of place. Like
What's weird about that film, then? I got to tell you, from this perspective of me being old, I actually saw Nightmare on Elm Street 3 first run. Mm. And it's so funny because that was actually the most popular of all of the Nightmare on Elm Street films. Back in the 80s, everybody thought that was hot shit. I've actually watched it recently, and it is so campy and so bad.
Yeah, it was campy, but it was fun, and that was really what we went for the horrors for. And on top of that, dream lore-wise, just the fact that like it really separates out and has these really intense blood, horror, death kind of situations, but then at the same time...
Welcome to prime time, bitch.
but then at the same time, you've got things like the fact that he cuts open the person's veins, pulls them out, and then walks him off
Love
the roof.
That sequence.
And in the thing, it, and again, some of these scenes were genuinely terrifying as well as being camp, and it's like, it fit perfectly into the sequence of things. And it's
it also reestablished the lore, because we had the first film, which is still arguably the best film of the whole series. But Wes Craven took it fairly seriously. Second film was shocking. It was a terrible, stupid sequel.
And I still love the fact that everybody relates it to the concept of coming out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is great, because the gay innuendo in it is thick and fast, even though that may not have been their intention.
Then part three changed the rules and kind of made it all about the dream world. And all the sequels after that followed that
again
lore.
And this is the thing of a great franchise, is setting up something that the rest of them can work with. And that's what three did. And four and five opened up this really interesting world. And the birth of Freddy and where he came from is actually a really intense concept.
Yes.
And makes a lot of sense in the series. Again, it's all silly horror, but it's still these really key moments that you kind of have to know to really be able to understand the entire thing.
And I quite like them. I like the Nightmare on Elm Street films. I think they're good.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why.
And they vary in quality up and down, but overall, it's a good, fun watch to get through them all.
Yeah.
My number one is the Die Hard films.
Yeah.
Now, the Die Hard films are an interesting one, because I think the first one is a
How did I not think of that?
I don't know.
I was going with the horror thing.
That's okay. I think Die Hard films are an amazing collection of films, because number one is a masterpiece. It is actually a brilliant piece of action, and it is actually the film that a lot of action films are gauged against. Part two is up the ante on the action, but not as clever a film. Rennie Harlan is not known for subtlety or, you know, particularly well-made films, but he does know how to shoot an action scene, and the action scenes are amped up. Part three, however, had John McTiernan return to the series, who directed the first one, and I really enjoyed part three. I thought part three was a lot of fun.
I don't get why everybody hates
part three. I don't either. A lot of great fun, really good character
dialogue between the two of them is fantastic.
And a lot of people were disappointed by part four when it came out. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought,
don't know what you guys were expecting.
Yeah.
I still have not got a straight answer out of everyone that goes, oh, yeah, four wasn't that good. I'm like, why? What was the difference
between three or two? I thought it was just a ride, you know?
Yeah, like, I still don't know how you can look at that and go, it's bad or it's good. It's like, what were you expecting? Like, it's exactly...
I want to see McClane get mad.
Yeah.
Whenever he gets mad, things blow up.
Yeah.
And so the scene in the tunnel in part four, when he finally starts muttering to himself and getting mad, he's going to go, there's the McClane we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Up to our asses in terrorists again, aren't we, John? I actually really enjoyed part four. I don't think it's in the same league as the first one. I don't think any of them are in the same league as the first one. Also, the first one gave us Alan Rickman, which will be a gift that will continue giving forever. The Die Hard films, I think, are definitely a franchise worth keeping up with. I'd like to also point out that two of the franchises on my list are both Joel Silver franchises. So it's interesting that he's the producer king of franchises. So that's our list. I have a couple honorary mentions. I talked about The Godfather. Now, The Godfather is actually a trilogy, but they are actually all separate, and they were made not together. They were telling individual eras of time. And so you could look at it as a franchise. I took it off the list because it is a trilogy more than a franchise as such. Harry Potter is a franchise.
Definitely, a
franchise that the only reason it's not on my list is because I haven't seen the rest of the last one yet. I want to see the rest of the last one, and then I'll talk to you about it, all right? And James Bond, I think, is the king of all franchises.
James Bond was going to go on there.
But I actually had it on my list. I took it off because it just felt too obvious. You know, it was just kind of like you go, yeah, that's the obvious list. But let's face it, James Bond is fun. Once again, it has its ups and downs. I think the highlights for me of James Bond would be Casino Royale, GoldenEye, and The Spy Who Loved Me would be my highlights of that series. Everybody has their own favorites.
Damn right.
And I think, you know, your lows would be things like The Man with the Golden Gun, you know. That
Moonraker.
I didn't mind Moonraker. It's stupid. Don't get me wrong. But I actually saw it at a time in my life where I think I was 11 when I saw it, or 12. I was in the Star Wars craze, and it just struck a chord with me, you know. And so, you look at it and go, it's dumb. But it's still kind of fun in its own right. Okay, that's our lists. Let's get out of here. I think we're done. I think we're finished the show. What about Planet of the Apes, somebody says. Yeah, that's not bad either. Although Planet of the Apes is a funny one because it goes really, really good first one, We're talking about the original Planet of the Apes, of course, not the remakes, but the really good one, and then it just goes steadily downhill from there for five films. But yeah, no, it is an epic. It is an epic franchise. It should be mentioned. Thank you, James from Melbourne.
Yeah.
All right. If you agree or disagree with our lists or anything that we want to do, or you want to chastise me for putting the Bourne films on, as everybody else seems to want to do, you can send it to feedback at filmactually.com. We have a new email address just for this show. Excuse me. Oh, that's the wrong address. That's because I've got the wrong slide up. There we go. So it's feedback at filmactually.com, or you can send us a voicemail, 02-801-13167. That is a Sydney number. If you are outside of the Sydney area and don't want to spend toll money, you can Skype us at Geek Actually is our ID, all one word. Follow us on Twitter, go to our fan pages, buy merchandise, do anything you want to do. Find us in any social circle. Just go to geekactually.com.
Most of the time I don't go outside.
There's a follow us link right there on the front page. Click on that. You'll find all of our links to all of our various stuff. If you want to follow our other show, or listen to our other show, I should say, Geek Actually, which is all of our tech and other geek out stuff, you can find that on iTunes, and all the back episodes of all of our shows, of course, are at geekactually.com. Now, if you want to watch us live and join this very active chat room that we've had today, guys, you are legendary. Go to geekactually.com/live. We typically start our broadcast around the 12 p.m. mark on Saturday afternoons in Australian Eastern Standard Time. That is a Friday evening for the American people because of the datelines. I say typically because sometimes we start late. Sometimes we, well, no, we never start early, do we? Sometimes we start late. Go there. You can follow us, join our chat room, and have fun with us. We do have a few shout outs we like to show on this show because we have lots of friends in this arena. WeekendRonan.com is the home of The Real Junkies, which is a podcast like ours, but they like to get drunk while doing it. They often differ in opinions from us, and it's good to get lots of different opinions before going to see a film. They loved Fast Five, by the way. You can also find them on iTunes. It's R-E-E-L Junkies. Okay. Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, they do a movie review show every Thursday night on Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM. Go check them out, and if you aren't in Fremantle, you can check their episodes on radiofremantle.com. They put up their episodes after the show. You also do another podcast.
Yes, rawdlc.com. It's a gaming website. Go check it out. There is so much information up there right now. It's not funny, and we have a heap more coming. We've got a very active end of the month coming up over the next couple of weeks. We also have a show Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Make sure you check that out as well. And apart from that, go onto iTunes, both me and Dave's shows, DLC Live, Geek Actually, Film Actually. Give them all 5 stars. We need ratings.
Fantastic.
And one last thing I would also like to say, friend of the show and also regular viewer, Celine Roberts is currently having a birthday, and I thought I'd embarrass her by letting everyone know that.
Happy birthday, Celine. I would sing the happy birthday theme, but we have to pay royalties if you sing it.
Yeah.
So,
no, let's not do that.
We will say happy birthday, Celine.
What day is today? It's Celine's birthday. What a day for a birthday. Let's all have some cake. Okay.
Cool. All right. And speaking of birthdays, we did it on the Geek Action Show. This is the last time up that we have an opportunity to do this. We'll do it one more time. Little Geek is also having a birthday on the 1st of June.
Yeah.
We are trying to raise the money to get him his own iPad. And for those who have already donated, thank you very much. This is the last chance because we have to have time to be able to transfer the money and actually buy the product. We are closing donations on Monday or Tuesday. So if you do want to help out with this, any donation is fine. The link is on the front page of Geek Actually. You have to get those donations in now. Everybody who donates will get put on the birthday card, and we will try and get him this iPad, which will be really good. So, but we have to close this off, and this will be the last time we mention this. So, so please do donate if you've got a couple of spare dollars you want to throw.
And Madison's birthday.
Oh, and yes, we have a special one here. James from Melbourne, who is a regular in our chat room, and he's done a few reader reviews for the site. His daughter, Madison, turns 10 years old, and we want to wish her a very happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Madison.
Happy birthday, Madison. All right. I think that's it. I think we're done. We're going to go out today. Oh, we forgot Josh Spencer, didn't we? Josh Spencer of Spenny Turns. There's so many people to thank.
Why don't you just start saying it instead of being like, oh,
Josh Spencer. Oh, because you know what the hell. Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. Best domain ever. He did our artwork for our show, and he is fantastic. You should go check out his other stuff. Go check it out. All right. Now, with all that being said, we're closing the show out today with a little bit of Brian Tyler's score for Fast Five. The track is called The Fast Five Suite, funnily enough. I was going to try and find some screen music, but I couldn't find the score, unfortunately. So Fast Five is a pretty good score, though. All right, so we're going to go out with this little piece of music from Brian Tyler's score. I want to say thank you to the chat room for sticking around with us for two shows and all day, because you guys have been awesome. I want to say thank you, Josh, for joining me again, as you do every week. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do the show without you.
I mentioned
know how much you're appreciated.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to stay before. I was just thinking about it. You're getting really good at doing that housekeeping section.
Yeah.
Just thought you should know.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's like succinct, man.
We just got to fly through it. There's so much of it. All I can think is if anybody else wants to get thank yous, it's going to get longer. We're going to do an hour and a half of thank yous and 10 minutes of show. All right, so let's go out with this music. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. As we always say, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye now. You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.